The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition for this week. Got a special episode, if you will, kind of atypical since Jim's out of town this one last day. He'll be back next week, but we wanted to get a little bit caught up on some tax-related questions, so Bob's joining us today. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. You sound refreshed after tax season. You're kind of back to normal, I hope.
I'm back to normal, or my normal, whatever that means. feeling back to normal and kind of shifting gears from tax prep to tax planning.
Excellent, excellent. So we have a series of tax planning related questions, I would call them, here. We don't really get a lot of tax prep questions here, but mostly tax planning. Because as people look forward into their retirement and they start to consider taxes, which everyone should be, that is, I think, an underappreciated area of planning that can really help out if you address some tax issues. And so doing projections involving taxes as a focus is important for practically anyone. There are certain cases where you just don't have any knobs to turn. You don't have any planning that you can do. The taxes are what they are. But for most people, they've got some ability to affect their tax lives. And by affected, I mean don't raise your hand and offer to pay higher taxes over your lifetime, but find a way to pay a bit lower taxes over your lifetime or over multiple lifetimes if we're talking about improving the tax profile for beneficiaries, you know, for kids or family members, et cetera. We've got a handful of questions. We'll see how many we can get through today. And anything else you want to say before we dive into the first one?
No, I think I'm ready to go. I enjoy the planning probably a little bit more so than even the prep. The prep is compliance work, and you know, there's you're looking at already for the most part what happened. Mm-hmm. So you're filling out forms based off of historical information, right? Even if it's only the prior year, it's in most cases over with. Planning is looking forward, in many cases, retirement planning is looking forward a lot of years, and there's a lot of, you know, kind of options and areas to look at and plan for, and that's what kind of makes it interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I would assume in your tax life that you have spent a lot more hours tax prep, so that's kind of a little more mundane and looking forward doing all these tax projections and stuff, especially with some of the new software that's out there, is kind of a revitalization, I guess, of your tax life. I'm maybe speaking for you, but I can imagine doing decades of tax prep and that there's a certain point where that, you know, has a certain amount of interest, but it's kind of the same stuff over and over and over again. And this is a new way of looking at taxes, maybe.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's kind of how I feel. And that is a good observation. You know, it has been a lot of years of the prep, but now more into the planning and enjoying it. Mm-hmm.
Nice, nice. Well, let's dive into one first question here. So this question, do they say where they're from? Nope, somewhere in internet world. Jim and Chris, and Bob, I'll add by default, I absolutely love your show. Didn't realize how much I didn't know until I started listening to your podcast and find myself listening to some of them twice. That's good dedication, especially when Jim's on the show, because sometimes he mentions things 3, 4, 5 times. In his attempt to get people to only have to listen once. But I agree. Sometimes we get off into the weeds and listening to it twice or more could make sense. My husband and I are both 49, and your show's got me to wondering if there's anything we can do now to ease our tax burden in the future. And secondly, would it be beneficial for us to go see a financial planner now to help with this, or is it too early? We've been do-it-yourselfers so far. My husband plans to retire at age 60, and I plan to retire anywhere between 55 and 60. Here are some details. We both are working, have a household income of about $260,000. Our investments total about $2.5 million, with the following breakdown. Roth, about $650,000. Always taxable traditional retirement accounts, about $1.8 million. And brokerage accounts, about $100,000. We've got... they're planning to do some conversions, if it makes sense. We fully fund our 401k plans each year with the Roth 401k option. We have two sons, one in college, one in high school, but we have two fully funded 529s. We also have about $26,000 in HSA, which we're adding to yearly and investing in the market to help pay for medical care once we retire. My husband will have a small pension, which he can take at 55, but we'll probably begin taking later so we can do more Roth conversions once we're both retired. Unsure how much it will end up being worth, but probably around $1,500 a month, so not a real large pension, about $18,000 a year. Also, our home is paid for. Appreciate any direction you can give me. So, just in summary, they've got about $2.5 million. About 25% of that is in Roth, about a little over 70% in traditional, and then a little percentage in what we'd call maybe taxable, those brokerage style accounts. They didn't mention their Social Security. I'll bring that up. That's going to be part of any kind of long-term look here, because that's income that's going to be coming in and be part of your tax story each year. But making $260,000 between the two of them, they're probably going to have pretty healthy Social Security benefits, is my guess. And then that small pension on top of it. So they are going to have some what I call forced income recognition, which is once they turn it on. Pension, there's some flexibility as to date. Social Security, of course, there's flexibility as to date you claim. But that at a certain point will just be income coming in every single year that all other taxable events will pile on top of. So, I mean, what are your initial thoughts, Bob, on this? First, I guess, I'll tackle one and then I'll turn it over to you. The little question they had up at the top that said, should they go see a financial planner now or is it too early? I would say there's not one variable that is the trigger for going to see a financial planner. I think during a large part of your accumulation phase, doing it yourself, there's nothing wrong with that. It's been shown time and time again that the key to accumulation during your career is dedication and consistency, shoveling money away, saving it regularly, almost religiously, if you will, for long periods of time, and suddenly you'll wake up and you'll have money and you can retire and do things. So doing that on your own can absolutely work. Once you get to the phase where you're having the questions you are, that might be the trigger, not so much the age that you are, but the part of your life, your financial life that you're in, you're now having questions that are kind of beyond the scope of a do-it-yourselfer, only because some of the tools that would be involved in doing a full assessment of what you're laying out here are not readily available to a do-it-yourselfer in a lot of cases. Or maybe you don't want to have spend the time doing the big spreadsheet to try to analyze all this kind of stuff. So it might very well be the time to go see a planner, one that is particularly focused on taxes, because that seems to be top of mind for you. So I'll handle that little question. But Bob, on the taxes and their profile, what do you think of their situation?
Well, I love their mix already. I mean, they have a great amount of their mixes in the Roth, the tax-free accounts. Mm-hmm. That ultimately gives you a lot of flexibility during retirement, as you know. So I think that's a great start. like that they're saving post-tax currently into the Roth 401ks. I would continue to do that. What are your thoughts? The last sentence in their email was about possibly electing to defer collecting pension to allow room for Roth conversions. I'm not a big fan of giving up income to do that. I mean, clearly that's a cost of the conversion. Now that pension may, you know, maybe by delaying it, it's a higher benefit, right? Yeah. That might work itself out, mm-hmm. but
they didn't mention that. And that would be a critical part of that trade-off is if it doesn't go up by delaying it, I would be hard pressed to be convinced that it makes sense to just let it go. That's just leaving money on the table in my eyes. With no trade-off, and but I suspect though if they can take it as early as 55, I don't think I've seen a pension. I'm trying to recall. I don't think I've seen a pension that if you claim it as early as 55, it isn't bigger later. Some of them don't increase after you reach 62, 65, an age like that. There's no further increases after that, but I haven't seen one that claiming it as early as 55, there's no increase between that and say 65. So there probably is some benefit to them delaying. And that, you know, as far as just the pension itself, so it could make sense to do so, especially if they're trying to do lots of conversions. But I agree with you, the mix that they've got, they might not need to be doing a lot of conversions since they're starting with a nice balance, if you will, what we call tax diversification between these different accounts. You are correct that they are ahead of the curve as far as a typical 49-year-old couple having this mix. This is, I hate to use the word abnormal, we'll call it atypical, but in a good way. Some people might be saying, wait a minute, they're doing Roth and they're making $260,000 a year. Well, yeah, because they realize if they're shoveling it all deferred, they're going to have this ticking tax time bomb of massive RMDs when they hit 72. Maybe, but they're retiring fairly early. So maybe they're going to have drawdowns. So I'm hitting a pause on should they even be doing Roth now, especially conversions in addition to, because they're talking about converting this year as well. I don't know, given their likely long-term, what we call tax planning window, which is the retirement between retirement and age 72, maybe even after 72, if they up the RMD age even more, that's a pretty long tax planning window to be doing stuff. They might be a little anxious, a little too anxious to do Roth at this point.
You know, that's kind of my feeling. I mean, I can't, mm-hmm. you know, without, you know, running the whole programming, it's really hard to know. But my gut feeling is I wouldn't jump into that as thinking automatically that's a good idea. And mostly because they do have that large window that they know is coming in that they're going to retire early. They're planning to retire early. Assuming they're going to delay their Social Security benefits, right, to get the better numbers, they're going to have a pretty good window of time where they're going to need to pull money from somewhere to cover their retirement or their living expenses and their retirement spending, early retirement spending. And so where that's going to come from, it's likely if there's a mix and some of that's coming from their qualified, always taxable accounts, that effectively is going to draw down those accounts, lower the RMDs, and perhaps, you know, smooth out their tax brackets for their retirement. That may be enough during that window of time. Or if it's not quite enough, maybe doing the conversions during that window in a 22% bracket or what might be a 25% bracket still might be more effective than trying to convert while they're both working.
Mm-hmm. And I'll throw out another variable that not too many people look at until they get really deep down the list of things to consider when tax planning. And that is, what are they going to do for healthcare between retirement and Medicare? There's kind of two groups, I think. There's a group that have access to subsidized healthcare after retirement. Those would be those who can retain some type of employer benefit, or maybe they have military TRICARE. They've got something going on. FERS, FEHB, which is the healthcare cousin to FERS. Do they have something that they have access to that will keep their medical costs reasonable until they can get on Medicare? Or are they going to be thrown to the wolves out in the open market? And if they're out in the open market, do they want to have access to ACA premium tax credits? So now if they've got this long period from retirement to 65, having access to money that won't create taxable income, so being able to draw out of Roths, for instance, might make sense, and filling them pretty aggressively can matter during that period. But someone who has access to reasonably priced health care without ACA premium tax credits doesn't have to worry about that variable. That's why all of these tax situations we're talking about, there isn't blanket general universal advice. There's blanket general universal things to consider. But for your plan, you've got to look at all these unique, very specific variables that are part of your situation and not necessarily your neighbor or some other person you heard their story on a podcast or something like that. So this is, I do think they need to be looking at a few of these things, and it might make sense to clarify a few of these things for them to do a detailed tax analysis, you know, what we call an advanced tax analysis. And they'd have to fill in a few of these the answers to these variables to do that effectively, whether it's, you know, us doing it or someone else doing it, certainly a taxed focused look here. And the reason why we would do it this early is because they're making tax decisions now. They're deciding to convert and they're deciding to contribute while they're making $260,000 a year. Face value, many people would say, no, that's, you know, they're already in too high of a tax bracket. What you doing Roth? It might make perfect sense, or it might not make that much sense depending on some of these other things. So, this is a classic, a deeper look would probably make sense just to give you the peace of mind that you're doing the right thing with your Roth approach right now.
No, I agree. There is a lot, and all of these cases, there's a lot to consider. And based off of a lot of that information that we gather, and of course we have the help of our planning software, we can kind of at least present various scenarios that allow people to make better decisions early on. As early, you know, the nice thing is these folks are thinking about things, and they're not a year or two away from retiring. So maybe the outcome is it's better to hold off for a little while, but at least 10 years from now, you can't say, oh, I wish I did that 10 years ago. Because then obviously you've lost that opportunity. And I do hear that from time to time. So it is good to be thinking about these things. It may make sense to do, you know, they do have about $100,000 left in the 24% bracket. So it could make sense to do some conversions, especially if they're going to have a period of time where they don't want a lot of income in that post-retirement pre-Medicare age gap. And then the other thing I would look at for these folks is paying the taxes on those conversions. You know, ideally, if they could pay the taxes from their cash flow from working, from wages, that would probably be ideal, because they don't have a huge buffer in the maybe taxable accounts to grab from. But that would be part of the planning that we would look at as well.
Okay, cool. So let's see here. Let's go to question number two here. This comes in from Iowa. Told us their name, but we'll not call them out by name. So George or Georgette here poses the following. Thanks for providing the education from your podcast. I learned so much. I listen to all your podcasts. I have a strategy planning question related to our RMDs. Here's our portfolio. Total IRA and 401k. They've got about $3.2 million in traditional and about $1 million in Roth, plus a regular brokerage and savings accounts of about $500,000. So they have about $4.7 million right now. At a fairly young age, we're both 58 with four adult children, one still in college. My wife is retired with SSDI, and I'm still working, maxing out my 401k. Our 2021 AGI is estimated to be 192, which continues us to allow us to max out our Roth IRA contributions. I'll plan to retire within 3 years. So fairly young at about 61 years old. That's my comment there. Based on our 3 million in regular retirement accounts now, we will have problems in our RMD when we reach 72. Starting in 2022, I'm planning to stop our Roth IRA contributions and start doing Roth conversions of our regular IRA account with about $100,000 each year for the next 10 years or so. I know I have to pay 24% tax on these conversions. Can you help me to punch out the numbers to get the best strategy or to reduce our RMDs? Or do you have a better solution for us? Or maybe I'm completely wrong with my RMDs calculation. My RMD estimate will be at least $125,000 per year starting in 72, at age 72. So they have, kind of a good problem to have. They have lots of assets. They've, saved a lot over time, but it has a, fairly significant exposure to future taxes in that they have, by their accounting, $3.2 million in what we call always taxable accounts, those traditional IRA 401k accounts, and are looking far enough ahead now. So they are looking out 14 years to age 72. They're 58 right now. And he's making some predictions that the RMDs are going to be at least $125,000, which, of course, is going to be piled on top of their other income that they might have. They don't mention much as far as they don't really mention any other income at this point. But there's got to be, Social Security or pension or, something else out there at a minimum. So what are your initial thoughts on this one?
My initial thoughts are they're going to have high RMDs, which is a good problem. I mean, it's a tax planning I don't want to call it a problem, but it's like a tax planning concern. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have high RMDs. It's really hard to predict that far out in my mind what those RMDs might be 14 mm-hmm. years away. It could be 17 years away if Secure 2.0 goes through with right. what they're kind of thinking about. Clearly the growth in that account over a long period of time is going to impact that number, and as well as what kind of Roth conversions or spending from those accounts can occur between now and age 72 through 75, call it. So I would say the 125 would might be on the low end, possibly. It could be, I ran some quick numbers, could be 200,000 a year potentially.
Yeah, what he doesn't share is during the time from retirement of 61 to 72, does he expect those accounts to remain untouched? If so, I agree, even at a reasonable rate of return, that 3.2 could be, double that or more possibly. And driving much higher RMDs, double what he's estimating potentially. Now, if he's going to be drawing down those accounts during that 11-year period from age 61 to 72, then maybe that's going to suppress their size. And maybe that's a conscious decision to even make here that, hey, since deferring, which is the classic approach, right? We call it the traditional distribution method, because so many financial advisors, financial planners over the decades have kind of done this, saying, oh, well, don't ever raise your hand to pay taxes. Don't pay taxes until you absolutely have to. Defer. Well, we've now all learned, well, some of us more quickly than others, have learned that can cause a train wreck at 72 now, was 70 and a half before. But whatever the age is, whatever the RMD age is, if you don't anticipate what's going to happen there, you can suddenly wake up one day and be like, oh my gosh, look at all these taxes. If only we had done something, if only we had looked at this earlier. Kudos to them that they're looking at it earlier, but the problem could be worse actually than what they're expecting even. And they're already concerned at 125,000 of RMDs could be way higher than that at this point. So,
right. That's a lot to, and a lot of what you said earlier on about the spending, will the spending kind of bring those accounts back down a little bit, or will that help the future RMD issue? And, And so we gather up that information as part of our programming is, you know, just roughly speaking, you know, how much do you think you're going to be spending in that retirement, you know, period. And that allows us to kind of figure out, okay, this is the amount of resources we're going to need to fund the lifestyle that the couple is looking for, or the single person is looking for. And knowing where that, how much that's going to be and where that's going to come from in the most tax efficient way. And that could whittle down that, well, maybe it keeps the 3.2 million from growing, right? We're going to have growth every year, and it's going to be hard to even spend that or convert that, even convert that. Mm-hmm. It may come back. You know, he's talking about, I think, 100,000 a year. You know, they have about 170,000 left in the 24% bracket right now. It very well may come back and say convert 170 a year, mm-hmm. For a while, depending on what the spending strategy looks like during the delay period. That balance, you know, in my gut feeling is it might come back with that recommendation. Mm-hmm. Because once you're in the 24% bracket, you know, it's almost like you might as well use it. Because the next dollar is not going to cost you anything more than the last dollar.
Right. And that bracket in particular has a very nice discount on it right now. You know, 24 versus 28. That's, I think, I've never done the, honestly, I have to admit, I haven't calculated it this way, but I think that's going to be the biggest percentage reduction of all the brackets. Although 15 to 12 is pretty good. 15 to 12 is pretty healthy too. But 24 to 28 is a noticeable discount right now during the Tax Cuts and Job Act. So doing what you can before the end of 2025 could certainly make sense. So I agree, if we were to run this in the software, given what he's shared with us, that it's likely going to come back to at minimum filling that 24 bracket for the foreseeable, you know, at least through 2025. And then, you know, who knows after that, but right now that's probably likely. But we don't have some of the key elements, right? We don't really know what the plan is between 61 and 72. He's shared with us all the concern about the RMDs, but there's a long period of time there that's going to ultimately affect what those RMDs are going to be, because it's going to affect what those account balances will be in that 11-year period of usage. What are you going to do during that time is critical in this particular case. So I think, you know, again, kudos that they're looking at it early. Like the last couple that was 49, looking at it, you know, quite early. This is still quite early at 58, 3 years out. You know, he doesn't share what they've been doing up to this date. Maybe they've been doing a fair amount, and that's how they've got $1 million in Roth already, is they've already been working on this a little bit. But despite their best efforts, I agree with you, they're probably going to have large RMDs, which is a good problem to have, right? If you think about it, the reason it's good is the account growth is going to be there. You have the assets. There is not 100% tax rate at this point. So when you have a gain, when you win, if you will, somebody being the government, 24, 28, 32, 35, the rest is still yours, right? So it's, you can't look at it as we have to avoid taxes for, you know, at all costs. It isn't an at all costs situation, because you're still net ahead, even though you're paying taxes on a larger account balance. Ask 9 people out of 10 or more on the street, would you rather have more money, even though you pay more taxes, but you end up with more money in your pocket? Is that still cool with you? They're going to say yes. So keep that in perspective as well. Not that I'm a fan of paying taxes. You know, I try to avoid paying excess taxes, I would call it, excess taxes through not understanding the tax rules and not looking forward and anticipating things and choosing to do things that will help you from a tax perspective. But, you know, all else being equal, I'd prefer to have more money than less, right? So I think some work is warranted here in looking at it, and maybe another, you know, advanced tax analysis style look at this would add some clarity. But they're going to have that be viable or valuable, they're going to have to think about what they plan to do in that 61-year-old to 72-year-old period during that tax planning window, we'll call it. because if that's up in the air, then it's going to be really hard for anyone, us or anyone else, to really put together a usable tax profile for them. Looking at just that account, that set of accounts, and just RMDs, that's a little too focused. You've got to look broader than that at more things. Okay. Anything else from you on that one?
Just one more comment on that one.
Yeah.
He mentioned that he was considering the Roth conversion starting this year, 2022, and that he was going to stop his Roth contributions. I'm thinking he's connecting that with higher AGIs with the Roth conversion income, which is actually not counted towards the AGI for establishing Roth contribution limits. So I think, and you correct me if I'm wrong on this, Chris, I think he could still do both beginning this year while he's still working.
Oh yeah. You don't automatically have to stop the one to do the other. So yeah, I would look at that. And if he, you know, it's from a tax standpoint, it's still going to create the same taxable event for the most part, but he doesn't automatically have to stop contributions just because he's doing conversions. Yes. It's all right. Going to be about the AGI trigger or ceiling.
Right. Right. The Roth conversion,
yeah, that's a good point.
Amount isn't factored into the MAGI calculation for the cutoff for Roth contributions. So it is possible to do both still.
Yeah. Good point. Good point. Okay. Number three here, let's see, came in December from, doesn't say, hi, Jim and Chris and Bob, I'm an avid listener to your podcast and would like to thank you for providing this service. My question is regarding paying taxes on Roth conversions. What are your professional opinions and recommendations of using money from an existing Roth to pay for Roth conversions? If it's something that's acceptable and recommended, what circumstances do you see the benefits of doing this, and what are the pitfalls? I would say 95% of my savings are in the taxable traditional / rollover accounts, with the rest in taxable brokerage account. Unfortunately, there isn't enough money in the brokerage account to pay for the taxes from the Roth conversions. Help. On another note, with 95% of my money in always taxable accounts, my concern is the huge tax burden that will come when I'm required to take my RMDs. The RMDs will be in addition to both my wife and my Social Security benefits, as well as my monthly pension. When we reach 70 in 5 years, our total Social Security will be about $5,000 a month, and my pension is also $5,000 a month, so about $120,000 a year of income, that forced income recognition that I, you know, have talked about. Needless to say, the additional RMDs will easily take us over $200,000 per year. I'm planning to do Roth conversions with the current favorable tax rates, but these rates will most likely not be extended. I also am aware of the IRMA thresholds. That's the income-related monthly adjustment amount. I'm adding that for your, essentially the Medicare premium surcharges for those with high enough modified adjusted gross incomes. He's aware of the thresholds and plan to keep below this threshold. However, the amounts that I can convert on a yearly basis for the next 5 years won't make an appreciable reduction in the RMD. It's a good point right there. He's only got 5 years before RMD age, and if he limits himself to the IRMA thresholds, he's not going to be able to do a whole bunch of conversions, enough conversions to put much of a dent in those ultimate RMDs. Any insight and recommendations on how I can reduce the taxes from our RMDs would be greatly appreciated. By the way, I have 3 grown children ranging in age from 20s to mid-30s. Want to leave them as sizable an inheritance as possible. Our Social Security and pension more than pays for our minimum dignity floor, and we haven't really withdrawn any money from our savings. So I read that whole thing. You know, we don't always need that detail, but every sentence I went through as I, you know, glanced through this before the show today, every sentence was, oh, that's important. Oh, that's important. Oh, that's important. It was all part of the things that need to be considered in this whole story. So, Bob, I'll let you take the first swing at it. What concerns you about this? And then what also, you know, what words of advice? He's looking for our professional opinion on, I guess, first, paying taxes on conversions from your retirement accounts, first of all, and then second, the rest of his whole story here.
Yeah, the first part, the you know, how do I pay the taxes when I trigger, you know, income, extra income, trigger more taxes, and how do I pay for it if I don't have the funds sitting in a bank account to do that with? And that is typically the ideal situation, is to be able to write the separate check, pay your taxes, and get as many dollars as you can from your traditional IRA or qualified account into the Roth account, right? We're trying to get as many dollars as we can at that tax cost that we're seeing. And so when that's not possible, and we see that, that 95% number comes up, you know, more often than not in somebody's mix. And so when we see that, you know, we plan around it, and it can still easily work. Cause essentially, if you think about it, what you're doing is taking the dollars that you're going to pay for taxes, if you're able to pay for it from an outside bank or broker account, and you're taking those dollars and you're getting those dollars into the Roth account, mm-hmm. and allowing those dollars to grow tax-free.
Right.
So you're exchanging dollars from maybe taxable to never taxable. And that is a nice thing when you're able to do it. Now, that being said, if both the Roth dollars and the bank or broker dollars end up in pools that you are never likely to spend, and that makes me think about that in this case because of their high amount of Social Security and pension, right? They mm-hmm. covers a lot of their minimum dignity floor expenses. If those two buckets of dollars end up being not spent, then the same effect to the children, which is important to them, they mentioned that, is the same as long as the step-up rules still exist. So in other words, grabbing sure. those dollars from the conversion and passing those dollars along to your kids would have the same benefit.
If you let them sit, that's true. That's a great point too, because if they stay unspent, that's why we call them maybe taxable. Maybe they're not, the gains aren't going to be taxable because they get a step up at your passing, which, you know, we've talked that possible the step up will go away, but you're right. Those, what we would normally call maybe taxable, get treated as never taxable, at your death if they get the step up. But now I will point out that's if you're leaving them alone. If you're trading, rebalancing, that sort of thing, you're going to be recognizing those gains along the way, and likely in their circumstances, because of their high income, are going to be taxable. They're not going to have long-term gains be at zero because of their other income that they've got going on here. But that was a good point, so I wanted to highlight that you brought up. If these investments in these brokerage accounts, these holdings that have gains that could be taxable, are going to be just left alone unspent in retirement. If you bank on the step up happening, and you want to plan on that still being in effect, you can look at those as tax free inheritance for the kids, and also a great funding resource for trusts, etc. But we don't need to go down that road here, but I wanted to call out what you mentioned there, because I don't think we've talked about that a whole lot.
Yeah, no. So in this case, with planning, it may actually almost come out the same or be the same, mm-hmm. Essentially, however the taxes are paid, if it's structured right and handled right along the way. So clearly something that would kind of work. I like the idea of trying to get those RMDs down and that future income down a little bit, because, you know, he mentions it will take us over 200,000, but, you know, we don't have all the information to know how far over 200,000. Clearly the 200,000 level was currently in at least tier one of the IRMA surcharges that, mm-hmm. that he's pointing out and he's aware of. But that's a number, you know, if it's just barely over 200,000, that's the number we can work with, and we can get that down. Mm-hmm. Through planning, below the 180, you know, ish number, and that's going up now, right, every year. So mm-hmm. there's some good planning opportunities where a little bit of conversion and maybe a little bit of IRMA pain early on to get those future numbers down saves a lot of IRMA pain later on and over a longer period of time.
Yeah, that's a good point. He's got 5 years now that he's trying to do some things, and actually maybe shorter than that if he looks at 2022, 23, 24, 25. There's really only 4 years left at the current tax rates, unless they do something before, right? They can adjust things before that. But right now they're going to expire at the end of 2025. And he's kind of, it seems like he's mentally limiting himself to the IRMA limits maybe, and that's why he came to the conclusion he's not going to be able to put much of a dent in his RMDs. But it sometimes can make sense to throw IRMA to the wind, ignore IRMA, and just pay the IRMA for a couple of years at fairly high tiers in order to get big conversions done to then get you out of the perpetual IRMA that he might be headed for. So don't just arbitrarily limit your tax planning to underneath the IRMA brackets. Yes, everybody hears that and, oh my gosh, I don't want it. But remember, IRMA is not a trigger that then lasts forever. It's not like you hit an IRMA tier and now you're in that purgatory for the rest of your life. Every year, this is determined by your Maggie from two tax years prior. So it can, and I've seen this a number of times in you know, some of the clients that we've done these advanced tax analysis for, where we just, you know, blow through several IRMA tiers for a couple of years, sometimes several years, to then get them in a steady state where they're likely in a low or zero IRMA tier and have all the other benefits of having those lower RMDs later on. So I'm glad you pointed out, I'm glad you brought up IRMA, because I think too many people arbitrarily limit themselves in their conversions and other tax planning to avoiding IRMA at all costs. Again, it can make sense to raise your hand and say, hey, please, please put me in the third or fourth tier IRMA for these couple of years, because I can see down the road it's going to pay dividends for me. Those are the metaphorical dividends, not real dividends.
Yeah, no, very good. I agree with all that. And I think just with the information that we have, I think there's some excellent planning opportunities for these folks.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, let's see. Next one here. This one comes in from... Not sure. Fairly recent, though. This is January, so it's only five months old now.
Pretty good for us.
Yeah. So, but all these questions are timeless, right? I'm sure these folks that sent these in would have loved to have a question or an answer a little bit earlier. But the point of these questions is more, you're paying it forward. All the questions we answer from people that sent in questions prior to yours, and you're listening to the podcast and learning through their questions, you can pay it forward even though your question you submit may not be answered for a while. It helps everyone who's listening to the podcast. And it helps us because then we don't have to come up with our own topics. So thank you. So this one starts, and this says, hi, Jim, Chris, and Bob. And I didn't have to add Bob this time. He included it. So this, I guess, we should have done right at the top because he acknowledged the tax prowess that exists with Bob. Love the show, and I've learned a lot due to a medical event in 2019. I've been thrust into retirement, so I'm, quote, drinking from the fire hose, unquote, and can relate to Jim's experience. I have a question about converting 401k funds to a Roth. These funds will not be used for about 12 plus years. Should I convert those funds now or never? If I convert now, over the next few years, they would be converted in the 22% tax bracket. If I don't convert, these would be my RMD at 72 and would be taxed at the 12% rate. Now I'll pause right there, and we're going to have to trust what he said. Because we haven't done any analysis to determine, yes, he's actually going to be in the 12% rate down the road. So I guess my first comment would be to make sure that's the case, because someone being in a 22 right now, and I'm going to kind of deduce from this. Down below he says his age. You know, I was going to deduce it correctly, 59, 60 years old right now, that being in the 22% bracket, dropping all the way to the 12 after RMDs kick in is a little atypical. So I'll make that comment, but we'll go with his numbers. He continues, should I convert now a little every year at 22 and let it grow tax-free for 12 years, or don't convert and let the traditional IRA grow for 12 and start withdrawals as my RMD and they'd be taxed at 12? Thank you. He shares his name. We'll call him George. Gives us a little background I think that might be important for our conversation. Wife is 53 and still working. He's 59 on SSDI. Our present income and minimum dignity floor are in an alignment and consume most of the 12% bracket. So converting any funds now from my 401k to a Roth would be in the 22. I would convert enough to take me to the top of the 22 and stop before I reach the 24. Or if I don't convert, I see these funds being used to satisfy my RMDs when I reach 72. These funds would be drawn at the 12% bracket. So he seems pretty darn convinced that he's going to stay in the 12% bracket even with RMDs down the road. So what say you here, Bob?
Well, my first question is, what does he mean by drinking from the fire hose? Is that a gym thing or?
I think drinking from the fire hose of trying to consume all the information that he thought he had plenty of time to consume to figure out retirement, but he got kind of thrust into early retirement due to a disability. He's on SSDI. So now he's trying to get caught up on all the things I think he was waiting to figure out. That's how I did it. And we talk about drinking from the fire hose in retirement as you do it yourself, or you're kind of shoveling money away every month, especially when you're doing it automatically with an employer plan. Doesn't take a lot of thought, right? You commit to it and it happens and there's not a lot, you just do it. Then suddenly you've got all these decisions about Medicare and when do I take Social Security and oh my gosh, RMDs and all this kind of stuff can be a bit overwhelming if you haven't looked at it prior. So that's my interpretation.
I got it. Well, thank you. That helps. I was stuck on that for some reason.
Okay.
So, well, my first thought is there's like a kind of a knee-jerk reaction is don't convert now at a higher rate than you're going to pay later. Unless you guess, like I guess, unless you needed to, but just from a pure tax standpoint, I'm not going to say it would never make sense, but it probably wouldn't make sense.
I think if I'm most concerned with him being wrong, that he's making an inappropriate forecast that he's going to stay in the 12% bracket even when RMDs kick in. I would be concerned that maybe he's not applying, especially over a 12-year period, the potential growth that he's got, happening in that 401k. I would make sure he's using something reasonable there, and even looking at, well, what if I get lucky and I get higher returns than I might hope for over that 12-year period. That's a blessing, but also a curse in that it might push you into a tax bracket that you don't want to be in. And since they won't be 12 and 22 in 12 years, most likely, unless there's an extension of the current breaks, they're going to be 15 and 25. So we need to point that out. It's not really a choice of 22 to 12. It's probably a choice more of 22 to 15, which still sounds better to recognize it at 15, but it's still in my stomach, it's still tingling a little bit saying, really? Is he really going to, does he really, his forecast look like he's going to always stay in that 15, which most people from a tax standpoint, that is a blessing. It's a very reasonable rate. Doesn't cause any, trauma, if you will, so much, but it only happens when you have not a lot of Social Security, not a lot of, other forced income and not a lot of RMDs. Are you going to stay down in that 15 bracket at that time? So they could change the rates on you. That's one thing. I personally don't think they're targeting the 15 and 25 brackets much yet for increases above those amounts. I do think that the sunset is likely to happen, especially at the 22 going to 25. Maybe they'll provide relief and extend the 15 bracket, keep it at the 12 that it's been for a while now. I don't know. I got out of the predicting what Congress will do business a long time ago. But I'm still concerned, I guess would be the word, that his assessment of his tax profile at age 72 might not be correct. If it is, though, it looks like he doesn't have a lot of taxes to worry about, and he might be better served focusing on other aspects of his retirement planning, and the taxes are a minor part of it, I guess I would say.
Yeah, that would be my advice to him, is to look at that account, and let's just say, you know, a 6% return. Okay, that's maybe a little high based on what we're hearing, but let's just, that would double, right? 12 years, 6%, yeah. 72, yep. Rule 72. So consider that like maybe a little bit on the outlier side, but within certain reason, reasonable chance that it could happen. And double that account. Is that RMD, when your account is doubled, going to still keep you in that 12/15% bracket? And if not, then this analysis, you know, takes a little bit of a different look. Mm-hmm. The only other thing I would consider is if that future 12/15% bracket is realistic, that tells me there's just a limited amount of income that a couple can have and stay mm-hmm. in that bracket.
Right.
Could the RMDs in the future affect the taxability of their Social Security?
That's an excellent point, because
come into play.
Yep.
That could be a game changer as well.
Right. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's also a key element. When the previous questions, they were all way above their 85% of their Social Security is going to be taxable. When you're talking about this kind of tax bracket in the future, you're now moving through those, gee, maybe none of my Social Security is taxable, or maybe only up to 50% is taxable. But if the RMDs are too big, it's going to, not only are you going to be paying the marginal rate on the RMD, but the RMD itself might be dragging your Social Security into more taxable status. So what we call your effective marginal tax rate is way above the 15 that he's talking about there. That should be looked at. I'm glad I have you on the show, Bob. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. No, and we've had a few plans.
Absolutely.
That have kind of fallen into that mm-hmm. range where that marginal mm-hmm. effective rate, because of yep. the taxability of the Social Security, can really jump.
Yeah.
And that could possibly make paying taxes at a 22% bracket now worthwhile. Again, there's just no way of knowing that without full program.
Yeah. And definitely, if he ever finds himself anticipating a little room in the 12, go ahead and fill the 12 right now. I think that we could all agree should pretty happen. Yeah. I think that's kind of a no brainer, but, definitely look at the effects of the RMDs on your Social Security taxability. That might be the game changer here. We'd have to see that. And, all four of these examples actually are great instances where people should be doing a little more tax work than I don't like, you know, from the seat of your pants. There's a few people that have such obvious tax situations that the seat of your pants approach, kind of what feels good or what kind of looks obvious, makes sense, and you do it. But there's far too many people that I think believe their tax situation can be solved by just glancing at it and considering it using a little what they would consider common sense, when in reality, they're not anticipating or taking into consideration all the variables. And looking at all of that together, a good tax person, not someone who just does tax prep, because tax prep are going to be focused just on accurately representing what happened last year and maybe tell you, well, next year don't do this because it looked scary. But they're not looking down the road. This is where we get into trouble with people that do look down the road and are doing aggressive, say, Roth conversions, and then their tax preparer says, what in the world are you doing? Don't do that. Look at your tax bill this year. That's crazy. Well, there's a reason I'm doing it. You're not looking at what I'm looking at. I'm looking down the road, and you're looking at just today. And a true tax planner is going to look down the road. So whether it's a financial planner, maybe that also is, you know, a great combo, I think, as a financial planner that's also an enrolled agent, or a financial planner that's a CPA that does forward-looking tax projections, as inaccurate as they shall be. I will throw that out there right now. We're doing projections. We have to realize that we can't rely on them to the penny by any means, or to the, or even, you know, to the dollar or $1,000, a couple thousand, tens of thousands of dollars sometimes, because we're making assumptions about the tax, what the tax rates are going to be, what the tax brackets are going to be, what, how much the accounts are going to grow. What we're looking for are fairly obvious signals that even if these assumptions are off a fair amount, it still makes sense to do this. And I think we have a client that you may have worked with, Bob, that is all about, and he said, you know, what I'm trying to do is minimize my maximal regret. And I thought that was a great phrase. It's look at what you're going to regret the most, and let's see what we need to do to avoid that. And that's probably the best you can do, but it's better than just letting, you know, standing back and hoping for the best and crossing your fingers that you're doing the right thing. I think everyone needs to decide what's going to bother them the most down the road and look at what scenario would, you know, create that and what can you do to avoid it. And that can go a long ways in kind of clarifying what you should focus on and which strategy should take priority over many others. So we're all about doing these advanced tax analysis approaches for people that have these kinds of questions. Not everyone has these questions or issues, but for those that do, that's exactly where we go. We start digging into all the variables affecting their taxes. And whether you, you know, in the future engage with us to do it or somebody else, if you have these kinds of questions, what we refer to as an advanced tax analysis is warranted. Would you agree, Bob?
100% agree. Yes. Yep. I don't think, I mean, honestly, I don't think I've come across one case that just, there wasn't some planning opportunity somewhere, mm-hmm. that we were able to help out with. So, there is a lot of factors and a lot of unique situations, and there's just a lot of areas that we can look at and usually find something.
And, you know, we didn't even bring up state taxes. Not estate, but taxes at the state level. We've been talking about federal here because it applies to everyone. But what state you're in, and then are you going to move to another state that has a different tax profile? That changes the story as well. So there's, you know, we haven't even mentioned all the variables. I just want to point out there's tons of variables that are unique to you that need to be considered when you're trying to figure out what's the right thing to do with your tax strategy as part of your retirement plan. So hope everybody liked the show. Those are the questions we wanted to get through today, and timing was perfect because I need to skedaddle. I've got a client meeting here, and then I've got to go. I'm going to be a marshal at the CSU graduation ceremony this afternoon, so I get to, I call them my little ducklings. I get to lead the ducklings up to the front to get their diplomas. It's a very exciting time.
So you're like the mama duck?
I guess you could call me the mama duck, yeah. I walk, not all the students, but my little crew of financial planning students. I'll get to escort them up to the stage and watch with pride as they walk across the stage and get their degrees. So that's what I'll be doing this afternoon. And then fully enjoying my weekend, hopefully.
Very good. Sounds great. Have a good weekend.
Thanks. We want to thank everybody for listening. And if you've got a question, go ahead and send them in to Jim is probably the best way. He's the collector of these. He forwarded these questions on to us. His email is jim@jimhelps.com. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or you can go to our website and submit it through the contact form there. But everyone take care, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.